A great financial accident is going to be brought to you by the Great Reset crowd. Time to go take a look at this. Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here. And listen, I got a special presentation for you today. What we're going to do is I'm going to show you here, out here on YouTube, what I was showing to my subscribers over at Peak Prosperity in November of 2020. And this concerns the Great Reset crowd, aka the Davos crowd. Listen, I am not unsympathetic to what they're trying to achieve, because I know as well as they do, as well as you should, that global oil supplies are tight and going to remain tight for a very long time, maybe permanently, that we have limited resources and unlimited demand and human desires, and that these have to be balanced out over the next few decades. So the what, I'm in agreement with, but not the how. Their how is very different from my how. My how is to educate you, help you understand what's going on so that you can make informed decisions on your own, because I trust you. Their how is to lie, cheat, use all kinds of crises to get what they want, but they don't want to do one thing, which is break news to you honestly. Why? Because you'd probably get pissed off at them and realize that the they in this story, our so-called leaders, are actually the same people who got us into a really dark situation. What, we're supposed to trust them now to be the people who lead us back out of that situation? Unlikely that they're going to suddenly rise to the occasion and be better than they have been. And certainly everything we learned about how authorities have behaved or misbehaved during COVID has only strengthened that position for myself and many other people. And that position being, I'm going to trust these folks? Not a chance. So let's take a look at what I was talking with people about, a year and a half ago now, so that you understand this is the kind of conversations we have at Peak Prosperity. Listen, it's time. It's time for us to understand that big changes are afoot. If you are like me and like the rest of our tribe, you want that information early as possible so you can mentally adjust to it, so that you can take new actions to increase the resilience of you and your family, and that you know that the time of waiting is over. Like, action is really important now. So let's see what I was saying back then in November of 2020, and then we'll come back out and finish this up. I want to talk about what this Great Reset is now, and I'm going to do it in the style here that I've grown accustomed to doing the COVID stuff. So this is a private for subscribers only, off the cuff here. And I would ask that you keep it here behind the paywall, because this allows me to say things that I can't say out in public or won't say out in public. So this is the Great Reset. It's happening. It's happening. And this reorients a lot of how I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it, what I plan to do, what my priorities are. I've just gone through an extremely large shift in my thinking over the past week or so. So let's start here. Let's start here. This is a piece that came out in 2016, I believe. Yeah. So this comes from the World Economic Forum. We'll get into that crowd in a minute. But that's the Davos crowd, right? These are the world's billionaires, leaders of companies, CEOs, big bankers. It's basically everybody who's everybody in this world of money and finance and commerce and corporations and all that. But here's what they put out a while ago in 2016. And I'm bringing this up because I think they just laid it out. They said, here's how they see the world. And here's how they see the world in 2030. And so they put this out 2016, 14 years ago. Wow. Now we're only, slightly under 10 years, depending on how you count, to 2030. So, and I put three words to the side, which is assess, orient, and act. And it's not different than when you get caught in a riptide. If you're in a riptide, the first thing you need to recognize is you need to assess that you're actually in a riptide. If you get that assessment wrong and you see you're being swept out to sea and you spend your time fighting back towards shore, a lot of people don't make that battle and drown because you use all your energy fighting something you can't. So the first thing is assess. Oh, I'm in a riptide. Orient yourself. okay, there's the shore, so I need to swim that way or that way, perpendicular to this flow, and then you take that action. So this is kind of like a riptide. There's a very big set of changes that are now afoot. They've been perking along for a while, right? But you and I, we've just sort of been waiting near the shore. Well, now that riptide is pulling out in a big, big way. So let's just tune in. And I love it when people, I love it when people go ahead and tell me what they plan to do, because then I know what they're going to do. So let's just tune in and see what the World Economic Forum envisioned for us back here. Nice music. Okay, stop right there. Stop right there. Stop right there. they lost me in step one. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. You'll see this word happy cropping up a lot. Christine Lagarde recently talked about it with respect to the ECB digital currency, which the ECB is busy gathering the input from customers out there, from the hoi polloi, from the people.
We are still in the review and consideration stage, but we've just launched a public consultation so that consumers and Europeans can actually express their preference and tell us whether they would be happy to use a digital euro just in the way they use a euro coin or a euro banknote, knowing that it is a central bank money that is available and that they can rely upon.
You'll own nothing. That's part of the hoi polloi, us little people. You'll own nothing, but who owns it then? Somebody's got to own it. So if you own nothing, that means you're just a renter, and that's the rentier class, the people who provide the rents. They make all the capital flows to them. So the first thing out of the gate, the people from the World Economic Forum would love you to think that you're not going to own anything, but you're going to like it. You're going to be happy with that. So that's kind of a really interesting thing. And this is based on the input of members of the World Economic Forum's Global Future Council. So a lot of people, a lot of marionettes busy helping to craft this brave new future. Okay, you'll own nothing, you'll be happy. Interesting way to lead off with this whole thing. Let's keep going here. Whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want, you'll rent. Think that through for a minute. Whatever you want, you'll rent. This is what they're envisioning. This is interesting because if you don't really own anything, then you're not really in control of anything. What are the terms of the rental? How do I stay on the good side of that? What are we using for money? How is it that my daily labor allows me to secure access to the stuff I'm going to want to rent? So whatever you want, you'll rent. You know what's on the other side of the rental coin? Ownership. For there to be a renter, there has to be an owner. And you put those pieces together and you got a rental coin. Okay. But look, they soften it with technology. Because this techno fantasy stuff, it's actually turns into techno fascism a little later. But they like to pull up this technology because somehow this is the magic salve. This is the bomb. This is the BALM, not BOMB, bomb. That it's sort of the religion of the day, if you will. Okay. Hey, but whatever you want, it'll be delivered by drone. Look, you don't even have to leave your house. This is going to be so awesome. You can just stay locked in there like a cow would stay locked in a stall. I don't know. I'm not really bonding with this part of the narrative, as you can tell. But this is the narrative. This is the riptide. We have to be aware that this force is coming forward, and there's a lot of power and money behind it right now. Let's keep going, see if it gets any better. So, okay. Very interesting. So the U.S. won't be the world's superpower anymore, so they're already sort of divvying this whole thing up. They put a nice picture of the UN flag set out there. You got the US right in the middle. I don't even, what is that? Romania to the right. Looks like Turkey to the left. It's maybe Slovenia. I don't know what all those flags are, but anyway, it's just a handful of countries. I'm going to guess it's about a dozen, maybe 15 that they're talking about here being part of this. So they've already started to section the world off. A lot of flags deemed not apply for this job. But the World Economic Forum is going to find a way to stitch together those countries. I think we can figure out who those countries are, and I think we can figure it out, and this is going to be a little bit of a logical leap, but follow with me, if you will. Based on which countries chose to withhold life-saving, cheap, off-patent medicines for COVID-19 from their citizens. I think those are the players in this club. I'm going to connect that dot for you just a little bit later. All right, so just a handful of countries are going to dominate, but right now they're already saying maybe it's even time to start releasing our hold on this idea of countries. This is back in 2016. They're getting a lot more bold about this particular statement right now, and they're basically saying, got to do away with the borders here. So, handful of countries will dominate. Let's keep going. Oh, you won't die waiting for an organ donor. Okay. Yeah, this is part of this techno fantasy part again. Like, it wasn't actually a chief concern of mine that I was going to wait, die waiting for an organ transplant. I mean, a really cool idea. I'm not really clear what this has to do with this brave new world we're going into or the big reset, like how organs suddenly became part of that. But okay, I think the appeal here is through this idea of techno-optimism, I guess. But otherwise, this one was a little off note for me. But anyway, you're starting to get a flavor here, I think, that one of the things that drives a lot of these elites is this fear of nature. Nature has cycles. One of those cycles is death. So there's clearly a death phobia that sort of wraps itself and infuses this whole thing, that they want to engage in this transhumanist project where maybe there's neural links and maybe your experience sets get downloaded and put into the cloud so you're immortal. There's this flavor of that that's going on here. Something other than just saying, hey, how about nature? You know, maybe we could just, you know, live within the bounds that nature set and we would have actually a fuller, richer experience of life because death is the cradle of life, as Stephen Jenkinson says. Death is the cradle of life. As soon as you fully embrace your death, you are then free to really, really enjoy this thing we call life. As soon as you're thinking, I don't have to worry because I can 3D print a new heart, you know, all of a sudden you're absolved from needing to remain healthy and make healthy choices, from having to entertain the idea that you are mortal and that you do have a limited time here. A lot of those things go away. So this one, kind of another sour note for me. Not bonding with the vision totally yet at this point in time. Hey, for the good of the environment and our health, you don't get to eat meat. I'm going to try. Trust me, the Davos crowd gets to keep eating the meat, though. Do you know that's the case, right? Like they get to do that. Pretty sure about that. And I'm not totally averse to this because I know that the way in which we go about raising meat at sort of an industrial scale is not healthy. It's not sustainable. It's a lot of things. This so-called CAFO, C-A-F-O, that concentrated feedlot model where, you know, we take all these steers and throw them in a feedlot and feed them corn it's not a good model. I get that. But there is a lot of land that isn't really suited for much else besides herbivores. In fact, the land is benefiting from the herbivores coming in. And if you manage that well, you actually create more abundance, not less. But I get that. We wouldn't be able to raise as much meat. But still, it's kind of an interesting thing to lead off with here is this idea that you're just going to get this occasional treat. But think of the control that's in here. If we back this up a tiny bit. Look, it's a very declarative statement that they come up with here, which says, you'll eat much less meat. You will, that's you'll, the contraction, you'll eat much less meat. You will eat much less meat, period. Right, and why? Well, let's think of the children, or the good of the health, our health and the environment. Okay, 1 billion people are gonna be displaced by climate change. Oh, we'll have to do a better job at welcoming and integrating refugees. Now, this one actually has a much more subtle tone to it. So we've already seen places like in France, which is one of the main countries that's also on board with this sort of neoliberal, world-improving sort of an idea. What we've seen is the refugees that have been coming out of North Africa, many of them economic refugees, many of them overpopulation refugees, a few of them war refugees, and a couple environmental refugees. But at any rate, they are coming in such large numbers that they are overwhelming the culture of France. And that's the more subtle part of this, which is that if you want or need people to accept a whole new paradigm, you want them to accept this idea of governing at the world level, that we need this big giant reset that we're all on board for. As I wrote, I get the need for that in many ways, because there's nowhere to go. There's no next continents. There's no, unless the Arctic melts and we can do one last little locusty scramble for whatever resources are locked under the ice. But beyond that, this is it. This is the story. We're out of planet. And so if you want to operate that as a world government and you want that to be sort of transnational, you can't really have this provincial idea of people holding on to the idea that they have a culture worth preserving. So you have to erode that right away. And plus, when you erode somebody's culture, it knocks out a lot of legs of their stool right away, and it makes them really wobbly and disoriented, which allows you to insert and install a lot of other things. So the way this works, the way I would be doing this if I was them, and they are doing it this way, is you have to put people really off balance. You have to really inject a lot of fear into people. Once you've injected enough fear and you've created a lot of uncertainty and nobody knows what's happening, the people as a mass, will generally beg for you to relieve that tension, to take all that trouble away. So if you want people to really adopt this new program, you kind of have to overwhelm their sense of cultural identity, their provincial patriotism, their sense that I am French and so therefore I'm different from a Brit. You kind of have to erode that. And one of the key ways to do that would be to swamp their culture. And so here they say, we this is the royal we, mostly you, have to do a better job. So I guess we haven't been doing such a great job at welcoming and integrating refugees. Kind of a funny part, because the way Brussels has been doing their refugee job in Europe is they've pushed it to such a pace that it's impossible to integrate. I think there's a if you had 100 units of culture, I don't think you could put more than one unit of refugees in on a yearly basis and have any hope of integrating them. You can't put 50 units in. There's no integration possible. You know, the two systems clash. So the pace has been too fast for a long time. So we'll have to do a better job at welcoming and integrating refugees. So you can see they've been planning this and thinking about this for a long time. But this is a subtle one, because this is actually part of, if you want to install all new belief systems for people, you have to dismantle the old ones. And one of the ways you do that is you shock them. And one of the shocking things you can do is you can dismantle their culture. It's an old story. I mean, this is what every colonial occupier ever did. This is what France did in Algeria. This is what the United States did to indigenous people and taking their children away and putting them in school and indoctrinating them in a different way. If you want to really obliterate a people, as a concept, you got to do away with their culture, because, you know, they have all these habits and customs and things that make them feel a sense of identity. So this is a pretty important one right here. You can see the outlines of it. Has nothing to do with being welcoming and kind. It has everything to do with a larger sort of a story. And I get it. I get where they're going with this one. I understand it. But what they're saying on the surface is not what's actually happening. All right, let's carry on here with this amazing video. Polluters will have to pay to emit carbon dioxide. There will be a global price on carbon. This will help make fossil fuels history. Okay, they lose me on this one, because you see me put up this chart all the time that shows the contribution of fossil fuels to the overall energy mix on the planet. Now, unless there's something I don't know about here, in which case I'll have to really reorient my belief system if there is something I don't know about. And the only thing I don't know about is, like, do they have fusion reactors all worked out in the back? Is there some alien technology that we caught from some crashed UFO or something else, right? Is there something like that? Because if there isn't, we got what we got. Now, I happen to believe that the people who are putting this sort of stuff together, they know the same story. And if they know about some technology I don't know about, fine. But if they have the same data I have, they know that we are at past peak cheap oil, and that we are not going to be able to continue to run this exponentially more use of oil, because you can't do that. And plus, the net energy is coming down on that. So here's the thing we don't have. You know what we don't have? We do not have a single example, not one right now, of a alternative energy ecosystem that entirely funds itself. Here's what I mean. bunch of wind towers go up, and the output from those wind towers, we use some of that for our daily living and economic activities. We use some to maintain the system, and another portion goes into all the processes required to rebuild those machines because they wear out. Let's say a wind tower, I'll be generous, lasts 20 years, right? Somewhere in that 20-year cycle, with its own power, you would have to completely build a new one. So all the steel that's formed for that, the fancy polymers, like big fiberglass, carbon fiber blades, all the circuitry, the diodes, the control chips, the specialty alloys for the gearboxes, magnets, they're really high-tech things. And the materials flow is really impressive. We have no working examples right now of alternative energy funding itself for its own recreation. None, right? Not at that level, not that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm sure you could make a wooden water wheel and replace it, you know, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about trying to maintain our current industrial society on the basis of switching off of fossil fuels. Okay, that currently is not possible, certainly not by 2030. But the other thing that's really contained in here, I like that this is the other subtle part, so let's decode this. There will be a global price on carbon. Well, if there's a global price on carbon, I mean, my goodness, for the good of the planet, you know, if you're a carbon consumer, you should feel guilty about that because, you know, the ice is melting and storms are happening. So if we just pay a little bit more, market forces will work it all out. Here's what market forces will do. All the poor countries, those who aren't in those little flags set at the top, Africa, South America, South Asia, they won't be able to afford the oil. And that means that oil will just go up in price, fossil fuels will go up and up in price. And as long as you can pay the price on that, you gain access to it. So really, this is a scheme right here to assure that the elites who have all the money in this pyramid story are the ones who have the access to whatever remains. It's pretty good. But remember, it's for the good of the planet. That's what it's... you can't make this stuff up. But I get it. I mean, this is pretty clever. You don't want to tell people that you want all of that oil for your private jets and your mega yachts because they get a little cranky about that when they're sitting there cold and not able to fuel their cars to get to work. Instead, you let them know that this is because we've all agreed that we have to protect the environment. So we put a global price on carbon because we're trying to make fossil fuels history. When the actual effect of that is you just make sure that fossil fuels become so expensive that only those who have a lot of money printed out of thin air, courtesy of the central banks, handed out to all their friends and neighbors, live next door to a central banker, I guess is what I just said. Because of that, they're the only ones who end up having access to what remains. So this is a way of enshrining that the richest countries get access to the little bit that remains, and also the richest people within those countries get access. That's how I interpret this little piece right here. Okay. You could be preparing to go to Mars. There's that techno fantasy. You could. No, you can't. Let's imagine that 1,000 people end up going to Mars in the next 50 years. I'll be generous. 1,000 divided by 7.8 billion will probably beat 8 billion then. Yeah, you have no chance. It's not going to happen. I ain't going to Mars. So I just love that, you know? It's just like, you could be preparing to go to Mars. You could win the Powerball. It's not going to happen. Okay. But again, this techno fantasy thing, like, but even with that, like, if we go to Mars, what the heck's on Mars? If you want to go to Mars, you can go to Mars right now. It's called, there's a valley in Antarctica, which gets no rain, is completely barren and devoid of life as far as we know it. And is bitterly cold. It's kind of like Mars. Go there, spend a month there, spend 2 months there. I don't care. It'll be a lot of fun. Who wants to go to Mars anyway? I mean, the excitement and the adventure, but in terms of a travel destination or a thing to really aspire to, there's no there. I mean, it's this barren, lifeless orb. I don't get it. Anyway, techno fantasy though. Scientists will have worked out how to keep you healthy in space, so that's great. Would these be the same scientists who couldn't figure out that hydroxychloroquine actually worked or that ivermectin was cheap and effective? Hopefully not those scientists. Maybe different scientists. I hope it isn't no scientists because those guys didn't work out anything. Look at the fantasy set here. Scientists would have worked out how to keep you healthy in space.
I hate to break it to you. You ain't going to space. Not going to happen. Statistically speaking, I'm pretty comfortable with that proclamation right there. Whoa. Time out. What are they tossing in here? Remember? 2020, it's kind of hard to keep up with it. It's really hard. Let's try. But somewhere around March or April, they threw out the whole New York Times threw out this idea of alien life and the Tic Tac videos because the Navy recorded these little things moving across their forward-looking infrared screens and their tracking systems that look like Tic Tacs. To start the start of a journey to find alien life, maybe there is some special technology at Area 51 I don't know about. I don't know, but this is the kind of thing that makes my eyebrows go, I think we're being prepped. I actually think we're being prepped. I think there's something coming around this whole idea of UFOs and aliens and whatnot. It just, it's how it's starting to stack up because, like, I'm not really clear why this would get inserted in here, you know? So this idea that the World Economic Forum telling you that maybe you'll go to Mars and scientists will have worked out how to keep you healthy in space and that you might go on a search for alien life. Sounds exciting. At any rate, this is one of those little things that always makes one eyebrow. If I could lift it, it goes, you know, keep your eye on this one. I'm not certain yet, but I think in the next 12 months, we're going to have some sort of a reveal here. That's a guess, but we'll come back to that at some point. All right. Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. They're a little vague on that one, don't you think? What is a Western value? Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness? Those are some American values. Western values, though, if I was going to sort of coalesce them around a set of ideas, the Western values would be around freedom, privacy, self-autonomy, and regulation. So this idea that you have freedoms, they are not privileges, they're rights, that you have certain inalienable rights. Those are, a lot of Western values are very centered on the idea of privacy and autonomy and things like that, that mostly 90% of my life is my own, and then I have to interact with the government for some remaining piece of it. That's kind of a Western value. So they say here their vision of the future is that Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. So they've broken. So Western values aren't really in alignment with their new future that they're seeing. And those Western values then would include things like economic freedom, privacy, things like that. That's how I see it. The checks and balances that underpin our democracies must not be forgotten. That's awesome. I mean, we're you mean like the media? The fourth estate that dropped every ball you could drop? This is how bad the media was this election cycle and this COVID-19 cycle. Every possible ball that they could have dropped, they dropped. It's like they were playing a game of baseball and they fumbled a football too and they dribbled the basketball off their foot. Like everything you could possibly get wrong, they got wrong. So I think we could forget that fourth estate kind of a thing at this moment in time. And the judiciary is not working and governance isn't working. And we hear about congressmen and senators coming away from jobs that pay $138,000 a year or whatever they get paid with $40 million like nest egg. Come on. There's no checks and balances in this system. So I'm not, and they got a nice picture of people having picnics. I'm not sure what that has to do with checks and balances. Interesting use of images, but the checks and balances must not be forgotten. I'm not really clear what they're after here. This one's more like a Rorschach test. You can see in it what you want. I'm not that clear on what that means at this point in time. So That's what the WEF, the World Economic Forum, sort of has in mind at this point in time.
So there, that's a pretty good synthesis of how I view the world. Listen, information is great, but information without action is just information. Worse, it might be information that causes anxiety. Because in that gap between information and lack of action, that's where anxiety or even fear, even paralyzing fear, can live. So we're all about information with action, coupled to, of course, your tribe, because we're all in this together and we're going to get through this together. So those are our three steps that we take at Peak Prosperity: information or education, action, and then connection to other people, our tribe. So with that, we're going to go over now to part two at Peak Prosperity for my subscribers, and we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to go deeper into what's actually going on with the Great Reset at this moment in time, because, oh my gosh, that crowd, they're pushing really hard, and they're knuckleheads. They're wrecking things much faster than I even thought was possible a year and a half ago. So thank you for listening. We will see you next time. And if you want to become a subscriber at Peak Prosperity, it's very simple. Click on over, follow the link, come to peakprosperity.com/membership, and you can get started for as low as $10 a month or $90 a year if you want to become part of our basic entry-level plan there. So come check us out. We'd love to have you. We have more and more people all the time rallying around this kind of information, which is kind of just common sense. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.